Welcome to Hellas Intrigue. I'm Jason Leisure. We have Mark Potash here. We're going to talk about the fallout from the epic loss in Washington. And
which was epic in itself.
And Tyreek Stevenson. And look ahead to the upcoming game in Arizona. The Bears are 4-3. We'll get to all that in a minute on Hellas Intrigue. Mark, I mean, do we move forward first or do we stay with the Washington game? Man, Matt Eberflus has been Matt Eberflus and everybody in this building this week have been trying to get us to talk about the Arizona Cardinals, which immediately makes me far less willing to talk about the Arizona Cardinals. We're not letting this go. It's one of the problems with the schedule a little bit of the way they do media access is that, you know, Shane Waldron is a guy you really want to question from the Washington game. You don't see him till Thursday. So this drags out much longer than the Bears would want it to. I'm not done rehashing what happened, what went wrong Sunday, when we get Shane Waldron on Thursday. Let's start with the offense in the Washington game and how this needs to change going out to Arizona. It was terrible. Nothing about this offense was good. You can blame the Doug Kramer play. You can blame the Hail Mary at the end. I mean, they scored 15 points. If they get the touchdown on the Kramer play, maybe they're around 22 or something like that, depending on what they decide to do with two-point conversions. The Kramer play is the one that stands out the most. But Shane Waldron thinks that the way he's talking about it on Thursday, Mark, makes it sound like he thinks everyone's just playing the result. Just, oh, this didn't work out, so you guys think it's a bad play.
Well, that's the way they always look at all those plays. When it works, it's fine. When it doesn't work, it's a problem. And in this case, I think I disagree with that. I think that was a first guess. That was not a good call in that situation to, you know, hand the ball off to a 6'2", 300-pound center in a game that it was just the context of the game. It was a hugely critical moment. They had played poorly all game. They finally had a chance to steal this game. And they do a play that the Bears just aren't a good enough offense to get cute, and they did. And so my argument would be, I just think it's a bad play call. That's just getting too cute in a situation where you don't need to. It was too important. And to them, it's like, well, if it would have worked, it would have been fine. I disagree. I think it was just a bad play call. And the issue is, I think, is because we've already had this once with an Indy, the option call on the 4th-and-1 at the goal line
to Swift.
And now we've had two situations. So the problem with that is not that play, because that play didn't actually help, actually would have helped the Bears if they hadn't given up the Hail Mary. It would have allowed them to score later, you know, with 23 seconds left, which would have been a benefit. But that's not the point. The point is you've got an offensive coordinator who is prone to making calls that are a little confounding. And, you know, where is this going? And so that's more of the issue on that particular call. But I think, and I'm not sure if you wanted me to go here now, but I mean, the bigger issue offensively was that coming off a bye, when you should be really ready to go, they were poor from the start. I mean, Caleb Williams was off target like he has rarely been off target.
All of which, by the way, just for a second, against a mid-tier defense.
Yeah.
Not a great defense, just kind of middle of the pack defense.
28th or 29th in passer rating allowed. And so obviously, you know, an offense that the Bears had where they had a quarterback with a passer rating of 100 or more in three consecutive games, you'd think he should have an opportunity to do well. But my point is, that was the biggest red flag of all, that whole game, of everything concerned, was that the offense looked like they had gone back to week one. And week one was pretty bad. That's a pretty big condemnation.
It reminded me a lot of the Houston game.
Yeah, well, that was week two. Yeah. So, I mean, it took a step backwards when they should have taken a step forward. And this is maybe trivial, but of the 10 teams that had a bye, the Bears are the only one that did not score in the first half after coming off of their bye. So teams in general are ready to go. They don't all win. I think teams with a bye are 5-5, but they at least offensively start quickly. In fact, 8 of them of the 10 had a 10-point lead at some point.
Some sign of having used the extra time
of having the bye.
Because Washington wasn't coming off a bye.
Right, and the Bears were just the opposite. And to me, that is a red flag that says, you know, where is this thing headed? And so the whole thing was really a red flag, just about the coaching staff and everything. And like I said, like I wrote in 1st and 10 this week, I think those are legitimate concerns that were in the same situation we've had with the two previous regimes. But the difference is this group has a quarterback, and a quarterback can make a difference and be their salvation, and that gives you better hope they can come out of this ahead. But to the original question, yeah, a lot of questions about Shane Waldron, the offense, and the Bears that were just disconcerting.
The quarterback is a big issue, and when you look at it's a big source of potential gain for the Bears in that Caleb Williams has tremendous potential. He's not near playing at that level right now. But the idea that he could, over the course of the season, reach that level, and you could get this massive upgrade at quarterback with the same player playing quarterback, is that gives them a lot of hope.
Which they didn't have as much before under
Fields and Mitch
Trubisky.
But with that, how much are they hindering him?
Well,
I mean, the most difficult part for us of watching Caleb Williams' rookie season and analyzing it is figuring out when he doesn't play well, how much of that is on him and how much of that is a Shane Waldron, Matt right. Eberflus problem, or how much of that is a Ryan Poles personnel problem as far as the offensive line is concerned. Caleb played badly on Sunday. 10 for 24, 131
but
yards. That's a bad game.
When he had a chance to win and steal it, he was on target.
He was.
He was back to being Caleb. His passer rating, I think, was like 114 or something. Once he got going. And that is a huge sign. And I always say this about this game. You know, this was not a great game for the Bears, but if they had not given up that Hail Mary, this would have been a really good game for the Bears, because it would have been one of those games like all the good playoff teams do. They play crappy coming out of a bye or whatever, and they find a way to steal it, and their quarterback makes the difference. And this is that's what the storyline, or my storyline, for this team would have been. That would have normally, like 2-3 years ago, would have been another bad game, another bad sign or whatever. No, I would have seen this as a good sign, that this is a team that this is what typical playoff teams do. When they're coming off of three good games, they come up, they crap out, yeah, but they find a way to win. And so I think that's the hope. And to the previous point about are they hindering him? Yeah, maybe they're hindering him, but the difference is the hindrance ruined Mitch Trubisky. The hindrance ruined Justin Fields, because they just weren't good enough to overcome it. They might hinder him, but he's still so good, I think, that he'll still be able to make an offensive coordinator out of Shane Waldron and a coach out of Matt, and maybe even a coach out of Matt Eberflus.
I think what you're saying about the Washington game is exactly what I was sitting there putting together to write during that brief time between when they took the lead and lost the game. That's what I'm thinking is, this isn't the same as the other years where it's just every week is about big picture. Is Justin the guy? Is he not the guy? Yeah. Is Mitch the guy? Is he not the guy? You're in a season where they have a roster to go to the playoffs. They absolutely have that talent in their building. And when you're in that kind of season, the individual games matter so much more. The story on Sunday is, did you go into Washington and figure out a way to beat another team that looks like it's probably a playoff team on the road? However you end up getting there, especially with a rookie quarterback, good for you. That's what matters. It did all fall apart on that Hail Mary. And the thing I've gone back to all week, like I don't know about you, but I've watched the replay of that Hail Mary 100 times. And every time I press play, Mark, I think maybe this time it doesn't get completed. Maybe this time it falls. That could happen. You can lose on a Hail Mary. The ball literally bounces Washington's way. That being said, there were things the Bears did to increase the odds of that
happening. This was the most preventable Hail Mary you'll ever see.
Well, it starts with...
That works. Of all the Hail Marys that have worked of all time, this was top five and most preventable. Just for one thing, I know what you're going to mention, some of the things, but just for one thing, just have a guy back there. Now, all the other mistakes, allowing the 13-yard pass, not rushing the passer, all that stuff, if you just have a guy back there, we're probably not having this conversation. But go.
Guy would have been Tyreek Stevenson, and we'll get to him in a minute. I go back even further, Mark, and I go back to the Doug Kramer play of blow that opportunity. And it was very telling. I don't want to stay stuck on the Doug Kramer play forever, but it was very telling after the game that Matt Eberflus basically conveyed he was thinking worst-case scenario handing the ball off to Doug Kramer is that he doesn't get it and they go for it on fourth down. He wasn't factoring in this idea that a lifelong offensive guard might fumble on his first ever NFL carry with the game on the line. I mean, if you get that and you're up 10 when Jaden Daniels is back there, then the Hail Mary is not going to even matter. But when we get to the Hail Mary itself, you're looking at as you're not getting straight answers from any one person, but you're doing this investigation of what went wrong on, and what you end up with, correct me if I'm wrong, what you end up with establishing as the facts of the scenario is that while Tyreek Stevenson is off bantering with fans or taunting fans or whatever, he is shirking two key responsibilities that he ends up blowing off. Because if you just watch the play and you don't do this investigation, then what you see is Tyreek Stevenson not paying attention, back to the snap when it happens, right, talking to fans. But then he runs over Mark and he makes his hero play and he's the guy. Tyreek Stevenson leaps into the middle and hits the ball. Not his job. Not what he was supposed to be doing. You find out later from Kevin Byard that was his job. And Kevin Byard not able to get a clean jump at that ball because guess who's pushing him in the back?
Tyreek Stevenson.
Noah Brown, 85, for Washington.
Yeah.
Tyreek Stevenson's first job on that play is to be boxing out 85 on Washington. Yep. His second job, Mark, is to be directly in the way of the exact thing that happened so he can prevent precisely what undid the Bears. It's a huge mental lapse that costs them a game. You're praising Caleb Williams. You're talking about Caleb Williams finds a way to overcome everything that's gone wrong and get them to the brink of victory. Imagine doing all of that. Imagine riding that out and then watching it fall apart like that. Now, also, there's the play, the couple of plays before where Matt Eberflus has just given Jaden Daniels all the room in the world to get to midfield to heave this thing, which even from there doesn't make it all the way to the end zone. So another 13 yards would have made a big difference. But specifically as it pertains to Tyreek Stevenson, we've gotten a whole lot of nothing out of the Bears as far as how he's going to be held accountable for this. What do you think they should do with Tyreek Stevenson?
Well, that's a little bit of a tricky question. For one thing, it's tricky because, like, I don't even know, like, let me put it this way. If you're thinking about your locker room, I don't even know if we know, maybe you can tell me, but I don't even know if he does what has the potential for the most damage if he does discipline Tyreek Stevenson or if he doesn't. I mean, which is, I've heard theories of both, that both can be damaging. If you don't do anything, people are worried that if you don't do anything, then you lose the locker room. But if you discipline him, he's worried about that as well. I don't know what the right answer is based on that. And that has to be a concern. A coach has to be concerned about his players. So again, there should be, let's put it this way. He should, I would not play him Sunday.
Really?
Yes, I would not play
him. You'd make him inactive.
I would make him inactive just to get the message across because this is not like a first offense for him.
This, as far is as from, being unfocused.
Yeah, yes. from the very first preseason game he ever had, he's had unnecessary roughness in the first two games. One of them was with a play. One was, I can't remember exactly the context of them, but I know they were somewhat similar situations where he just lost concentration, lost focus.
Well, he had one in that game.
He had one in the game.
That directly led.
He should have already been humbled.
That directly led. He put his finger in another player's face mask against Washington. It directly led to a field goal attempt. They were not in field goal range. Suddenly they were with the 15 yards. And they ended up missing. But, so there was no, you know, practical consequence to that.
Well, let me just say this. I am a huge fan of Tyreek Stevenson. For a guy who you can point, you know, he's a hit or miss guy. He makes mistakes, but it's part of the process of becoming really good. And so even in that game, again, another thing he did, he gave up a 61-yard pass. That's part of the Tyreek Stevenson development experience. I like him. I think he's got Pro Bowl potential. I think he's really good. I think you could win with him. But he's had enough instances now where he obviously doesn't understand how to hone that edge he has. And the only way to get through to him, I think, not the only way, but I think one way, here's the thing, they have more room to bench that guy. A lot of times coaches don't discipline people because they need them. You know, it's kind of not good coaching, but they just need, you know, like you wouldn't bench Michael Jordan or whatever because you want to lose the game. They have more room to discipline this guy than anybody. Literally, they've won games without him already. They have more depth at his position than most NFL teams have.
Ever.
I mean, the backup was out.
Rarely has.
Terrell Smith, who's a really good prospect himself as a starting NFL quarterback, wasn't even there the last time when he was hurt, and they threw in Jalen Jones?
Jalen Jones is is the backup, yeah.
Right. The third guy, I mean, so they have, Eberflus, from his standpoint, he has more room to make a stand here if you want to be a disciplinarian and discipline this guy and not pay the price.
Well, you're right about that. Yeah. I've never covered an NFL team, and I have trouble thinking of other NFL teams that have had this good of depth at corner, which is really impressive considering what this staff walked into with Jalen Johnson and nobody, basically.
Yeah,
they have legitimately three starting level backups at corner in Terrell Smith, Josh Blackwell, and Jalen Jones.
Right.
They're still possibly down Kyler Gordon. We're having this conversation Thursday afternoon. Kyler Gordon didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday. It's not looking very likely he's going to be available. That'd be a bold step. When you talk about benching, like straight up not dressing Tyreek Stevenson, A, you are correct that they probably have the margin to do it talent-wise because of their cornerback depth. And B, I think you're right that is the best thing for Tyreek Stevenson in the long run.
The only way you get across.
Tyreek Stevenson needs that in his head going forward, that I cannot be that undisciplined.
Yes.
That being said, I wouldn't do it. I would not penalize the rest of the locker room by holding out a talented player,
right,
especially when you're already down Kyler Gordon. I would want Tyreek Stevenson available to me. Now, what I might do is kind of a soft benching of, he definitely doesn't start.
Yeah,
Terrell Smith. No, you dock him a start. I mean, when that's gonna that has some effect. But if you put in Terrell Smith or Jalen Jones and as the
that's
starter,
that's a slap on the wrist to me. What if
that guy plays well? What if they put in Terrell Smith and Terrell Smith starts for Tyreek Stevenson and it's going fine, and maybe you just end up leaving Tyreek on the bench that week?
You could. I think all or nothing would be my way of doing it, because you got to get the message across. And I know this John Hoke's a really good secondary coach, and he's an older guy. He's my age, I think, and he's an old school guy, and I think he knows how to get across the guys, but yet he really hasn't gotten across enough to this guy. So it's not for lack of trying. I don't think they've been lax, let's put it this way, but I just think that's why I think you need a measure. And I'm not saying, you know, if they don't, it's not going to be the end of the world, and the kid's really, I think, a strong-headed kid. I think he gets it. You know, I don't think you absolutely have to do this. I just think this would be the proper move to really get it through to him. That, you know, this just you can't just. I think it would help him. It would help. He needs to grow up. I mean, he needs to mature. And when he does, I think he's going to be a really, really good player in the league. But you know, I think that would be a legitimate step towards doing that.
If you try to look through the catalog of when they've disciplined guys, I mean, really the only person that comes to mind for me is Chase Claypool, that they eventually told him don't come to the game, I think, when they were playing Denver, and that was step one of he's gonna leave the building anyway. It took a while for them to get to that point with Claypool, but Claypool never did anything that was as egregious as this. There were some effort issues, there were some execution issues with Claypool, some attitude. There wasn't a total checkout where he's on another planet on the final play of a close game.
That was past the point of no return, though. He was not going to recover from that. I think the better example was Martellus Bennett was suspended for a game, but it was during training camp. He got disciplined, and it was also a time where they really were disciplining players, and he body slammed like Kyle Fuller, who I think might have been a rookie at the time, in training camp. And and Phil Emery was the GM at the time, I believe. I hope I'm getting all these facts straight, but anyway, they did discipline him, and if I recall, Martellus Bennett ended up making the Pro Bowl that year, you know, and he was a guy who needed. If you know anything about Martellus Bennett, that guy needed some discipline. He's, you know, another headstrong guy who just, you know, needed to be known that, you know, the world didn't, you know, just rotate around him. And so that's I'd have to research it, but off the top of my head, that's the one time I remember discipline. Even though it didn't cost him a game, but just, I can't remember, they suspended him from practice. I can't remember. They did something that laid down the law and made him miss things. But my recollection is that it had a positive effect on his season.
One of the reasons that I wouldn't bench Tyreek Stevenson, and why I think, like, outright, the way you're talking, and one of the reasons why I'm pretty sure Matt Eberflus is not going to.
Oh, I don't think so either.
Is because the Arizona Cardinals are not a joke. We're used to kind of laughing at them. They've been kind of a disorganized, dysfunctional franchise, but this is not a joke when you're facing Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. They're 4-4, and you're going out west. This is not an easy game at all.
Right.
What are you seeing when you look at Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr.? Because that's an interesting combination.
Well, they are right now. Marvin Harrison's been hit and miss. You know, like a lot of rookies are, although he's supposed to be above that, I guess. But it's been hit and miss, and when they're on, those are if you look at the record, those are Kyler Murray's best games. But the thing is, it's not because defenses defend him any differently. It's just because he's a rookie and they're still getting used to it. They kind of control that. He's that good. And so I think that's going to be a huge factor in the game. The Bears, we talked about this, you know, earlier today, the fact that the Bears really don't, you know, focus on one guy. They don't shadow anybody. So in part because they can't do it, I think they've said that because of the way defenses are, but also just because they just almost philosophically don't, it sounds like.
I don't know why you wouldn't when you have a guy like Jalen Johnson. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
Find a way.
John Hoke has explained it before about the way teams use motion to get out of it and stuff like that. But I'll be honest, I don't know that much about the X's and O's of it. All I know is that the Bears just almost make a point to not have, if they have a really good quarterback, to not shadow the team's best receiver. As you saw, McLaurin burned Stevenson for a 61-yard pass play.
Beautiful throw.
Jalen Johnson wasn't on him. So, but anyway, they don't. But it's going to be a key point of the game. But I guess my point about that is that it's not one of those situations, I think, where the Bears, even a team as good as the Bears defensively, control that. I think if Marvin Harrison is like he's a potential Randy Moss type player, and he's on, but I think they control that more than – it's more of a Cardinals issue, the inconsistency, than it is a defensive issue.
And the true dual threat quarterbacks like Jaden Daniels last week are really problematic. It's not like it was for Bears opponents when they had Justin Fields at quarterback, where you can say, okay, we're not letting him
right.
run. We're going to make him stand back there and beat you. Well, Jaden Daniels can do that.
We'll
and
do
Kyler
that.
Murray can do that,
well, now
too.
That he had, when he had DeAndre Hopkins and now that he has Marvin Harrison Jr., yeah, now he can. When they played him, was it last year?
Mm-hmm.
Not as big a threat.
So when they talk about some of the problems they had with Jaden Daniels, I mean, he's not one of a kind. There are other quarterbacks. The Bears have a quarterback like this right now, Caleb Williams, where and Kyler Murray is going to be this type of problem for the Bears defense. Where, Mark, when it's 3rd and 3, you got to be prepared for anything.
Right.
3rd and 3 or less, they could pass, they could run,
yeah.
they could call a pass, but the guy ends up running. All of your defensive linemen have to kind of hold off for a minute and play back and see what they have. There's some hesitation in there, and that could be an issue for the Bears. I think that this stacks up as a really tough challenge. I'm picking the Bears because Arizona's defense isn't very good. Arizona's defense gives up everything. They give up points. They give up yards. They're not good against the pass. I think they're one of the 10 worst pass defenses in the league as far as opponent passer rating. And they're not particularly good against the run either. They're maybe average to bad in that. So I think the Bears will be able to score enough points that they're going to look a lot more like they did against the other bad defenses they've faced, like the Rams, the Panthers, and the Jaguars.
Yeah, I picked the Bears as well, but I have to say this is the first time in a long time where I just really have no idea. I mean, I've just really struggled with which team to pick when you consider, you know, all the issues the Bears have. I picked the Bears because I think it would not surprise me. I'm kicking myself already for making the pick because I know what's going to happen.
Classic Potsy.
I know what's going to happen. Well, I mean,
classic
that's,
Potsy
that's
prediction,
the,
right?
That's
there.
The way, but that's the way all NFL games
predicting
are.
Predicting both sides.
Either one, but would either one surprise you? Is there?
Well, you have to
no
be
result.
Surprised by something.
No, that's
you
my
have,
point.
You have
no.
to have something no. you expect,
okay.
and then when the thing
okay.
you expect doesn't right. happen,
no,
you're
but,
surprised.
But that's my point.
I expect they will win, so I'll be surprised if they don't.
Okay, no, I don't look at it like that. I think
I'm not going to say I'm going to be shocked, but I'll be somewhat surprised because what I think will happen is that they'll win. So when
I don't know what will happen.
This is. What do you think will happen?
I don't know because if the Bears lose...
You should put that for your prediction.
The Bears lose 24-17 or they win 24-17, neither of those would surprise me. So, I mean, I don't know why that's a big issue.
Okay.
That's the way the NFL is.
So you picked Bears 24-20.
I picked the Bears to win 24-20 just based on the fact, well, two things. A, I think it's a good matchup for the Bears. In other words, the Bears have an offensive line issues, but the Cardinals don't have the kind of defensive line that can really take advantage of that. And against teams like that, the Bears have actually done really well. So I think they're good. And also, I'm putting a lot of faith in Caleb Williams that he'll be better than he was for three quarters against Washington for three quarters, and he'll just be better. This is something that I wouldn't say with either of the previous two quarterbacks, that I think, oh, he'll just be so good, because Justin Fields never showed the type of passing ability that consistently that you see with this guy.
Oh, Caleb's a better passer than Justin Fields today.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying.
Justin Fields is in his fourth season, and Caleb's
there's just so
better.
Much more confidence that it might not happen. He's still a rookie, but I just have much more confidence that just because he's Caleb Williams, doesn't have anything to do with the offensive coordinator or the offense or this or that. Just because he's Caleb Williams, he'll be better. So I'm basing my pick on that, but I'm not kidding. It would surprise me if they got blown out, I guess. But, you know, the Bears can crap out at any time, so nothing would surprise me. But if they made me make a pick, so I took the Bears. I think another factor is, I think there's, well, A, they're coming off of this game, I think, which is a kind of a humbling game for them. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that you can recover from. But also I think there's a sense of desperation, if, for lack of a better word.
Helps you
because
lock in.
They know this NFC North thing is looming. They know they've got to get as many wins as they can now. They need to win this game in their minds because they don't know what's going to happen against the Vikings and the Packers and the Lions. And they know that gauntlet is coming up. So I feel like they're going to be even more focused than you would normally see a team in the exact middle of the season. This is more like an end of season, a December game for them. And I think as far as games go, as far as recovering against a beatable opponent, I think they'll just be more on point. And I think, with the quarterback and with their defense, a defense that allowed a ton of yards but only four field goals until the end, I think that gives the Bears an edge.
The schedule, I think, always set up favorably for the Bears to be backloaded.
Yes.
I think that's what you needed with a rookie quarterback. But the issue is that eventually you hit that hard part.
Right.
And even if they get to 6-3, they play the Patriots next, and then this part of the schedule starts with the final eight games. Even if you get to 6-3 winning the next two,
right,
you're going to have to probably go 4-4
right.
down the stretch to make the playoffs.
Right.
That's going to be really hard.
And the difference,
that'd be hard anyway. But that's especially not something you look at this team right now and think, well, they're going to be able to do that.
What you say right now is the key phrase, because when you look at this team, I think in the last week or so, certainly just in general the first half, but especially the last week or so, you've lost that confidence that eventually they'll get there, you know, that they will, you know, they're beating up on the Rams, the shorthanded Rams and the Panthers and the Jaguars, and they'll work their way up towards being good enough to beat the Packers and Lions and Vikings. And after last week, with the way the offensive coordinator is, the way just in general, you lose a little bit of confidence that they'll get to that point, because otherwise you're right. The season set up perfectly for a developing team with a rookie quarterback.
If you catch pace,
win game. You should win games like against the Jaguars, against the Panthers, and when you don't play well, still beat the Commanders, which didn't happen, but should have happened. And then you get good enough to win for the meteor schedule. And
that was the hope. The hope was to get to 6-3, 7-2, something like that. And at that point, then be ready to contend with those teams that are coming up. And
we don't know that they're going to be ready
right
for that.
Right now, today, they're not. Right now, today, they simply are not. I want to ask you one more thing about just kind of where you brought up Matt Eberflus, where you stand on him at this point. But before I do, the rest of the picks are it's a very Bears-heavy picks week for the Sun-Times. Rick Morrissey has the Bears 24-21. Tellender has him 24-23. Scoop Jackson has him 21-20. So what? That's a couple of one-point games and a three-point game. Patrick Finley has the Cardinals 24-23. Pat the Contrarian. I've got the Bears 24-19, and you've got them 24-20.
Yeah, Pat with the Miracle in the Desert reversal. Always taking a shot at the Bears.
Matt Eberflus was kind of reverted a little bit this week, I feel like, as far as his public handling of the public side of his job, which is part of his job. There are a lot of football coaches that are dismissive of that being part of their job. It is definitely part of their job. You are the premier face and voice of the organization during the season. And Matt Eberflus said some things in the recent offseason that indicated he understood that. He was, that clicked for him after how badly some of the things went last year. He was going to change that. In-game decisions, I think, have not been very good. His handling of the offense has not been very good. It seemed to me like he intervened and got Shane Waldron on track there after the Colts game, but those were against bad teams, really bad defenses specifically. And then when they faced a mid-level defense against Washington, it seemed like it reverted back. So what I see in Matt Eberflus is I see a guy who has proven to me definitively he's a very, very good defensive play caller. Yeah. I'm not going to take that away from him. I think he's really good at that. Not perfect. I think he knows that he should have done some things differently at the end against Washington. He's a really good defensive play caller. There's a lot more to the head coaching job than that. That's a defensive coordinator, what we're describing pretty much right now. He's got to be responsible for the offense. He's got to oversee Caleb Williams' development. He's got to make sharp in-game decisions as opposed to ending with three timeouts in his pocket the other day when there's at least two times that it would have made sense to use him. And he's got to take hold of the offense. It doesn't matter that he's a defensive-minded head coach. He can get fired at the end of this year with a very good defense, but the offense being a disaster. Yeah. That can get you fired. That's what head coaching responsibility is like. So how do you think Matt Eberflus is doing this season, and what are you looking at as far as his outlook going forward?
Well, I think he's just kind of, you've explained it. I think he's just kind of solidified this narrative that he's a good defensive coordinator, but he's really not a head coach. We talked about this in the off season heading in, and he really hadn't had very many situations, in game situations where he could, where he lost the game or whatever. There were some bad games like Denver and stuff like that, but there weren't enough examples to see how he would be at the end of games. And I think we're seeing that. Well, we certainly saw it last week, and not good. And also the reflection afterwards, the answering the questions has been very, very reminiscent of failed coaches in the past. And I'm talking about Mark Trestman and Matt Nagy, who are, really good coaches, but there were certain moments where they just didn't handle them well. There were red flags. And I think we're seeing those same red flags here. But again, like I pointed out earlier, at least he's got a quarterback and a little bit of a better roster to deal with than those guys had. So there's one thing that bothered me more than anything else this week, to tell you the truth, and it was regarding the timeout. And of all the questions that were kind of that he didn't really answer well, or just the fact that he doubled down on so many decisions, was happy with three rushers and a spy and this and that, but it was just the execution. The problem I had was with the timeout when he was asked twice, two or three times now, could you have, when you saw that Tyreek Stevenson was out of his mind or whatever before that play, could you have called timeout? And he said everyone was in the place. I can't remember what
he
said.
He didn't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
I know.
That's obvious.
Right. To him, then he was asked again today, and he kind of wouldn't say that. He just mishandled that, just the response, of that. That I just really had a problem with that. I just think that was the worst of all, was that, that they didn't notice. That's why I asked Eric Washington today, should you have noticed?
He said flat out he didn't.
Yeah.
He didn't see it.
Nobody saw that.
No one on their army of assistant coaches didn't
see
it.
So I guess my point is that he said, everybody was in place, but everybody wasn't. So they really didn't have a good view of it. So it was poor coaching, in my opinion. And so, he's got a lot to prove. And maybe if Caleb Williams develops into the quarterback, he can. That would help the situation. But too reminiscent of two of the last three, for me, that left a lot of doubt as to whether Matt Eberflus is the guy to take this team from point A to point B and point B to point C.
What I come down to, Mark, my way of looking at it is you look at who has the most on the line with Matt Eberflus working out or not working out, and it's Ryan Poles. And so if you go back to last season, you see how that went, and you're asking yourself at the end of that last season, I'm asking myself, is Ryan Poles willing to continue to bet his tenure and his employment on Matt Eberflus, Luke Getsy, and Justin Fields? There's no way he could feel good about going forward with that, and he didn't. They fired two out of the three of those guys. They fired Getsy, they traded Fields, went with a 22-year-old at quarterback. You're really going to have to ask that Eberflus question this year. Because a GM will probably get two shots at the quarterback and two shots at the head coach, and then they're out. Does Ryan Poles want to bet his job on Matt Eberflus as much as he likes him, as much as Matt Eberflus, and this is correct, but as much as Matt Eberflus was a good soldier during that first year when they stripped the roster down to nothing, especially on defense, and he just had to eat losses. He goes 3-14 in his first year. Probably not the way he imagined his first head coaching job, but he took it. He towed the line. Are you willing to bet on Matt Eberflus getting you where you need to go and keeping you from getting swept out with him?
We're a long way from, frankly, I think we're a long way from that decision.
Well, if you had to answer it now, you wouldn't feel very
confident.
Well,
but it's just too early. It's too early to really entertain that because we don't know what's going to happen. They could step up, rise up, and play well and really do better than expected, and then it's not, and make the playoffs, and it's not an issue. But right now, you know, unless, let's put it this way. He is, to me, in the same position as like Justin Fields was, where he has to get a lot better. He's good at some things, not at everything, but he's got to get a lot better in the next six games next 10 games, whatever, to prove that he deserves to stay on. And Justin Fields failed that. He was not good enough. And I think as a coach, Matt's in that position where he has to prove himself, not just stay the course. He's got to prove himself.
He's headed to the exit if nothing changes.
Right, and I agree, and I have to admit that's a little bit different. I've changed my thinking on that because beforehand I was saying unless his defense is the problem, I think Poles is so tethered to him that because that's his guy that as long as their arrow is pointing up, they would stay with Matt Eberflus after the season. I can't say that now. The way it's gone, because he's just been exposed a little too much as a head coach right now, and so it's very possible that no matter what happens, regardless, I mean, unless there's like a, you know, they win eight of the last nine or whatever, I could see them making a change. But I think I think it's premature. I know we speculate for a living, but I think there's still a long way to go in a lot of big games. But I guess what I would say is he's just like Fields. He's got a lot to prove.
Matt Eberflus can buy himself a little bit of relief. He can't answer all those questions for you this week, but he can buy himself a little bit of relief if they go out there and win. They have an easier game the week after at Soldier Field against the Patriots, who are really bad, and in at the onset of their rebuild. Another big week, tough road game for a guy. Coach that I think has won three road games in his entire time with the Bears. But if they can go out and beat the Cardinals, again, just another average team, not a bad team, not a great team, just another average team. If they can go out and beat the Cardinals, it will buy him a week of quiet, which he could really use right now.
Yeah, you won't get any definitive answers from this, at least to the positive.
Not till we get into the real test, which is the second half of the schedule. For Mark Potash and Patrick Finley, who's not here, I'm Jason Leisure. Thanks for listening to House Intrigue. We'll be back with you Sunday night from Arizona.